thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Evening. Welcome to Shriekfest Radio. This is Denise Gossett. I am the festival director and your hostess for the night. In case you don't know what Shriekfest is, it is a horror, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy film festival and screenplay competition. And we hold the festival in Los Angeles, California. This is our 13th year. What it is we accept entries of independent films, short films, feature films, short screenplays, feature screenplays, and original songs. And we have over 40 judges, and they judge them, and the best ones get into the festival. And the festival, we screen all the films, and at the end of the festival, there is an award show, and we pick winners from those ones that screened, plus the winning screenplays and the winning songs. It's a lot of fun. If you have a project, you need to get it in now. Our website is www.shriekfest.com. Our last deadline is July 10th, so you still have some time. If you're out there and you have a project you want to get it in and you think it's not going to be ready by July 10th, shoot us an email and we'll see. We can usually work with you. So our email is shriekfest@aol.com. So like I said, it's our 13th year. And if you don't have a project this year, you need to come to the festival. It's October 3rd through the 6th. It's a lot of fun, especially if you're a horror or sci-fi fan, because there's some really great films that you don't get to see right away out there. Or if you do see them, it'll be on DVD, most likely. So this is a great place to see it. We have a great theater. And 95% of all the films that do screen at Shriekfest get distribution, including the shorts, because now they get on DVD compilations. So back in the day when there were Blockbusters on every corner, you could go into a Blockbuster and look in the horror section and you'd see all these Shriekfest official selection or Shriekfest winners on the fronts of the DVD covers, which was pretty cool. I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So good times. Anyway, tonight we have Sky Soleil on the show. He is an actor, producer, director, pretty cool guy. Tonight's call-in number is 619-639-4606. I will also be checking the email, shriekfest@aol.com, if you would like to ask a question of me or Sky, or just chat a little bit. We would love to hear from you. Let's give him a call. I want to catch up with him. He had a film in the festival 2008 called How My Dad Killed Dracula. Great horror comedy short. We'll find out. Maybe he's got a website or something where you can go see it, but it's a lot of fun. So let me give him a call.
Hello.
Sky.
Hi, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
Doing wonderful. How are you?
I am great. It has been a while. I was just telling everyone that you had a film in the festival in 2008, How My Dad Killed Dracula, and how it's a fun horror short comedy. Where can people see that?
Online. Just do a Google search for How My Dad Killed Dracula, and it'll pop up, and you can actually watch the film on Vimeo right now.
Awesome. It's a really great flick, and I hope everybody checks it out, because it's really clever and funny and just really well done, Sky.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's so good to hear your voice. It's been a long time.
I know. Time flies. For 5 years.
I know. know. It's crazy. I know. Part of me still thinks it's like 2010. It's like my sometimes my brain hasn't quite caught up that we're this far ahead. But anyway.
I know.
Now, I introduced you as Sky Soleil. I hope I'm saying your last name right.
You are, yeah.
I thought it was, because I thought that's what you told me back in 2008. But I just
similar to Cirque du Soleil, yes.
Yes, yes. And you created that, right?
No, that is my birth name.
No, I'm saying you created Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, yeah, I wish.
Yeah.
Or
he's
if
very,
that was my family.
Man. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are an actor, director, producer, a little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything, yeah.
Which of those do you prefer most? Like when someone says, what do? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I guess right now it would be producer because I'm working in that capacity on a featured project. I would have said actor previously. But this year, I'm really moving into, I have a passion project of mine. So right now, I would say producer.
Wow. Okay. Now, you have acted in a lot of your projects as well.
Right. How My Dad Killed Dracula being an exception, but several of my shorts. That was also a passion project, but I just didn't see myself. It wasn't a role for me in that, and I didn't want to wedge myself in. So I decided to just focus behind the camera, and that was kind of my film school. We actually, being that it was 2007, 2008, I shot on film and really had the true film experience. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's really pretty. So when you are in it and you're directing it and producing it, how do you handle that many hats? Is there a secret?
I would just say as an actor, all my preparation is there. And so I'm not having to worry about that. And when you're working as a director and then you're also in it, I would say my projects, I've just created environments that are easy to work in and don't contain a lot of headaches for me. So they're lower budget and I'm able to just get in and do what I need to do without having to worry too much. So I'm far from, say, a Mel Gibson and some of the projects he's done where he's directed and acted in. Like Braveheart, I would say there's a lot to learn to get to that level.
Right, I can't
but
imagine.
But I definitely, yeah, I can't either on that scale. but for someone who's been at it for as long as he was and then to jump into that role, I'm sure just the acting was something that was just so natural to him that the other hats take the focus.
Right. I'm sure that's what happened. Wow. You know, I know that you said before recently you would have said actor first. That is because Sky has an amazing resume. Everything from Numbers to 24, Criminal Minds, Medium, Sleeper Cell, Brothers and Sisters, NCIS, Prison Break, Cold Case. It just goes on and on and on. Wow. I can see why you would have said actor first. That's impressive.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Starting around 2006, Numbers being sort of my first little role, I've done about 11 co-stars and guest star roles on TV, and my latest one is going to be the Frank Darabont pilot on TNT, Lost
nice.
Angels,
nice.
Previously titled L.A. Noir, yes, and I got to work with him, and it was just an incredible project, so still acting and still pursuing it, but definitely this feature is taking my producer focus.
We will come back to that feature. Since it
sure.
was How My Dad Killed Dracula, that was the one that was in Shriekfest. I would like to talk a little bit about that one.
Absolutely.
If you can dig back way, way back into 2008 or 2007, actually, when you were making it, how long did your project take to create from conception to final completion?
I would say around final completion about a year. So once I got the script locked and then really started looking at financing and then production and post, I would say about a year.
Wow. Now, okay, you wrote it. So did you just sit down one day and say, I'm just going to write this story out? Where'd the idea come from and how long did it take you to write it?
My great uncle Ronnie, actually, this is it's based on a true story because it was a prank that my great uncle Ronnie pulled back in the 70s on my uncle and his cousins. So
You're
it was
kidding.
A story that I grew up, no, I'm not kidding. It was a story I grew up hearing at every family event. After dinner, we'd gather around and my uncles would tell the story of how their uncle Ronnie lured them into the backyard thinking that, you know, he had killed Dracula and buried him there with shovels and flashlights. And you'd hear everybody tell their different side of it and how he got them out there and how unbelieving they were. But then when they started digging and actually hit something, the level of belief just quickly came, and it was one of the best stories I heard growing up. So sadly, my great uncle Ronnie was in a car crash. He passed, and I was thinking of a way to honor him, and I thought, what better way to do this story and show something that I had heard growing up and something that my uncles share so lovingly and fondly of their uncle. So I just decided to do it, and I wrote essentially, I updated it so I wouldn't have to do a period piece because I thought the costs involved with that would be really
right.
difficult. So I just set it in modern times, but my uncle Steve, my cousin Mark, cousin Todd, they're all in there, and their points of view are shown. So it was kind of easy to write from that standpoint.
Now, when you first heard the story as a kid, did you believe it?
Oh yeah, because it's a prank, and I grew up hearing the full story. So it was essentially he was with his son Mark, who was in on the prank. They were at a fish market, and someone had caught a stingray and actually had dried it up, and so it was caught and it had shriveled in the sun. And it looked, my cousin Mark said to his dad, it looks like a bat. And he just, in that moment, thought, yeah, it kind of does. And I think it sparked, I could pull a prank with this little creature. So he bought the ray. He brought it home. He and his son built a little wooden coffin, put a stake inside of the ray's chest, and then buried it in the backyard. And this was like early in the year, so they waited. Grass grew over the area where they had dug.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this was an elaborate scheme to really make these kids. So then come Halloween night when he's saying, I killed Dracula, it's true. And they're all, whatever, Uncle Ronnie. No, we can go out. We can dig him up right now in the backyard. And so he got him out there, and lo and behold, because he had set it up so well, they find it and they believe 100% that it was real because when they open, unearth the coffin and then open it up, and at that point,
creepy.
All the dirt, the nails are old, and it was sold so well. So it's one of those, it's the greatest prank I've ever heard of being pulled. I thought it was fantastic. So when I heard it as a kid, has anyone else tried to do it?
Yeah, have you?
No, not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge.
You have to keep that in the back of your mind and pull it on somebody someday.
I
think it would create nightmares for children.
Yeah, agreed. And and that's another thing too. Some of the kids, the casting of mine, have noted that the kids seem really young, and it would be really harsh. But that was another thing that kind of came into play when casting the project. There were just some kids that came in that were younger that were so great. I just decided to go with them regardless of their age. And one was Maxim Knight, who's now on the show Falling Skies. And he was the youngest of our crew, and he was just incredible. He was just amazing. And now, you know, he's working and doing really well as well, but just didn't stop me from casting them, even though they were a little younger.
Well, I'm glad, because, you know, it's the type of movie that could easily have been destroyed with bad children actors.
Yeah, they did a great job. Yeah. I know, I agree. Yeah, and I saw about 100 kids.
Wow.
Yeah, and just really brought them all together, and it was tough. There was about 8 at the end that I really had a tough time deciding who would be the final 4, essentially, that would make it into the short, and then, but you do it, and yeah, as an actor, you know, you can kind of see how the process works and whittles down, and even though some of those kids were incredible and great, just working with the dynamic of building the best 4, choices had to be made, so, yeah.
That is amazing. So, any memorable moments while shooting it?
Chinatown was fun because we, rather than shooting at a fish market on a pier, we found a gentleman who owned a shop in Chinatown, and he let us shoot in his store, essentially, and just set up shop there, and that was really neat. And his mother and his daughter actually have little cameo roles in the the short. So the non-actors just were there and present during our shoot. And when asked a question about what is this ray thing that they see, she answers in Chinese. So it's pretty funny that it worked out that well, and she was able to just jump in and do it, and she was fantastic.
That's funny. What's your educational background? Did you go to school for acting or filmmaking?
I did. So acting, I went to a 2-year program at Mesa College, JC in San Diego, and then from there I auditioned for the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco.
Wow.
And went to grad school up there.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, no, it was wonderful. I loved it up there. I can't say enough about the program. And just San Francisco, it was wonderful living up there.
Yeah, I bet. That's a fun place to visit anyway. I want to talk to you about this Homeless Man Under Pressure video you made.
Yes.
This is remarkable. Okay, this is on YouTube for you people out there who haven't heard of it. And it has gotten over 1 million views. It's almost towards 2 million.
Yeah.
And where did this come from? What made you decide to do this?
That was actually a nice segue, because I was in grad school and they would have cabarets that the different program years would participate in. So we'd create these little shows on Friday night and put them up in the little black box theater at our school. And one of the themes for one was, I think it was, come up with your worst audition piece ever. And I had a Kermit the Frog puppet, and it wasn't the iteration that you're describing. It wasn't there yet at all. It hadn't evolved into that.
Okay.
But the early development of it was, I walk into an audition room with a suit. I have a violin case, and I don't speak. I'm silent. I sit down behind, I set up a little keyboard, and then I open the violin case, and I have a little boom box, and I push play, and inside of the violin case is a Kermit the Frog puppet, which I take out and put on my hand. And then it's the song Sad Lisa by Cat Stevens. Are you familiar with that song?
Yeah.
So that plays, and then essentially I make Kermit perform that piece. So he sings it, he plays the piano, and there's a violin solo in mid-song, and I lift him, and I put his legs under my chin, and I grab a violin bow, and I play his legs as if he were a violin. So it's very strange, but it kind of just came out of, if you were an auditor, if you were holding auditions just openly and someone came in and did this, I think it would be very strange. So it worked for that setting, but I was surprised actually how funny people found it to be, and it just really did well. And so I consistently worked on it. When I moved to LA, I started, friends of mine were doing comedy at local clubs, and at one time I just asked the owner if I could do this piece, and he let me, and the audience in the comedy environment really enjoyed it. So I started doing it at various clubs throughout LA, and then it just evolved, and I wanted to step it up. I wanted to do something more than just the one piece, and I was always interested in using two puppets. So I obtained another Kermit puppet, and I always loved the song Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie. So I started working on that. And then I started doing that. I was involved with improv at the Upright Citizens Brigade, started doing it in venues there, and again, just started performing that act. And people went nuts for that one. That was just way more than I had ever thought it could garner. And I knew it was, you know, someone actually approached me after one of the shows and said, have you ever considered like selling this act? I do Vegas promotions, and he actually offered to buy the routine from me. And so at that point I said, well, I probably wouldn't want to sell it, but I think it's time to maybe turn it into a short or film it. And so I decided to make a short film with this being the centerpiece, and that's how it came to be.
Wow. Now, I know that, you know, people are talking about it and, you know, what the song means, and because you do it as a homeless man with a sign,
right,
you know, saying, you know, that you're homeless, and so you obviously meant it as a message, or was that just a afterthought?
Well, as a standalone piece, when you kind of just do it in a black box setting with an audience, there wasn't a story that needed to be told. It was the act, and you're watching it and you're taking part in the moment. And there's something very visceral about performing live in front of an audience and them having an experience that way. But when you put something to film or you decide to shoot it, I felt that there needed to be more of a story involved than just simply the act, because the act by itself, I didn't know how people would react to it. So I just decided, listening to the song, the lyrics are there. It talks about people on the street, and that was a really cool thing. Some people said they really had never listened to the song until they saw my act set to it, and it really does. It speaks to people on the edge, people that are, have kind of maybe snapped mentally and are, you know, being under pressure. We need to look out for those people because, you know, there's a line, insanity laughs under pressure,
right,
we're cracking.
Right.
So there's just things in the song that really spoke to me. And I just thought, what if someone who had, maybe a puppeteer had lost his job, and what would that guy do in that situation? And if that was his living, if he were a puppeteer, and kind of found himself in really hard times, what would he maybe do to feed his family? And that's what came out of that.
You know, I what I love about it is you came up with the idea and you did it, and look at what this, you know, kind of simple idea, and kind of, some people might think it's a silly idea. You're using Kermit Frog to sing this song to Kermit Frogs. But wow. And why do you think it has been such a sensation? What made it go viral within days?
Well, I think initially people actually thought he was a real person, the character I was playing. So they wanted to help him. And
oh,
the response was just overwhelming in
Oh my! But how do you think they first saw it? Like, what made them find it on YouTube?
Well, we posted it, and I just shared it with friends, and We got like 200 views, I think, in the first couple of days. So nothing major. And then a friend of mine who had seen it, who I had done improv with, there's a website called Reddit, which is just a people upload things they find interesting on the internet, and it's like a voting based system on that site, and people, because of their reaction there, voted it up. And at the time, and even now, a lot of people focus on that website and look to it for kind of what's popular on the internet today. And mine had gotten to a level where it was on the front page and had gotten a lot of attention. Yeah, and then from there, I mean, just news organizations. I mean, 3 to 4 days later.
CNN and CBS, New York Magazine.
No, we did a CNN interview. New York Magazine was the first to contact us. We did a.
What did they say when they interviewed you? What were they asking?
They wanted to know, similar to what you're asking now, like how I came up with it. Why did I think that it had grabbed people so much, affected people? Because like, people were commenting that they would watch it and cry, and it got a response that was, you know, some people just found it really funny, other people found it very moving. And then homeless advocates actually wrote me, and they kind of validated a lot of it, because initially I had to dispel the rumors of it's not a real person,
right?
But I think that was part of the attraction, because people wanted to believe that there was somebody out there like that, or somebody who had fallen on hard times but then was so talented that they wanted to help that person. And then we saw in real life the actual thing is the voiceover guy. I think it's Ted Williams, the golden voice man. A short while after the Kermit video, he was discovered asking for money, and had this amazing radio voice, and then got a lot of attention too. So I think there's a level of people want to help people, but they're also attracted to people that have talent that they can kind of identify with. Well, maybe I'm, you know, if I were to fall on hard times, I would want this same sort of hand to be there for me, and people reach out and help. It's a strange phenomenon, but I think it's interesting, and to be caught up in it was pretty wild. So yeah, a lot of the news organizations were asking the same questions, and I just tried to answer honestly. And one thing a homeless advocate had pointed out to me was that people get to a place where the homeless topic is so hard to deal with, that this video was, because it was lighthearted, because it was funny, allowed them into that world in a way that normally on the street, when you walk by a homeless person, your reaction is one of no eye contact, get away. Some people might have different reactions, but I'm guilty of that too. There are times when it's just their problems seem overwhelming and it's difficult. You don't want to look at that. That's not something of our society that we're proud of or we want to take the time to deal with. But the video allowed a softening of that, because you have two Kermit the Frog puppets. You have a funny sort of routine, but then the underlying message and the song as it goes along, the impact of that then kind of can take hold for some. Some people might find it ridiculous, but others might have a reaction that is similar to what a lot of people had.
You know, when I watched it, at first, you know, I'm like, okay, where are we going with this? Okay, he's homeless, and we got two Kermits. And then, honestly, your facial expressions were what made it so powerful to me. Because I felt, you know, I know you, I know you're not homeless, but I felt that the pain that this man was going through, and the only way he could express it was through the frogs. It was really, really unique. I think everybody should go look at it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you're welcome.
Very much. Very nice to hear.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, so as an actor, I did, it's more than a puppet routine. So, like, to your point, I mean, if I were preparing to play a character of that sort, to kind of put myself in those shoes and to do that, the puppet routine I practiced so much and performed so many times
You had to have. It was flawless.
Yeah. Well, there is a flaw. There is one flaw, and that
is
I open. Yeah, if you rewatch the video, I actually open, I think it's the Kermit the Frog on my left hand. His mouth actually opens when it shouldn't. And my DP, when we went back to his place and we're putting it online.
Did he add in a ribbit or something?
Yeah, he added in a little, Kermit's clearing his throat.
Yeah, okay, I noticed that, and I thought, oh, that was kind of cute. Was that on purpose? I did notice that. That's funny.
So it was a mistake, but we were able to cover it up in a really cool way. So, and
yeah,
I knew it had happened. When we were there, we shot it about 3 to 4 times, and he told me, he said, that last one, the one that you see, he said, it's great. And I was like, oh, but I screwed up at one part. I know I opened his mouth at one point. He's like, really, it doesn't matter because that was the best one.
Clever how you did it. It was almost like they were performing and one was getting ready to say what he had to say and he just cleared his throat.
Right. No, I'm so happy with that. Sometimes mistakes can be the best things because I love that. I love that
exactly.
that happened.
Now, was there any issues with rights? I mean, you've got Kermit, and you've got this famous song with famous singers.
Yeah, so as far as, I would never try to make money off of this. When it did gain popularity, I just put links for people to help the homeless. I wasn't interested in doing anything financially with it because it was... Yeah, and I just push people towards helping others in ways. There's that woman who, the homeless advocate, who had told me that it, kind of the story of why she thought it worked so well, allowing people in because of its lighthearted nature. She actually had a site that you how to help the homeless without spending a dime. And that's still the link on there today. And I thought that was so cool that, you know, she just puts different things out there. So you don't actually have to go out and spend money or throw money at the problem. You can do different things. And one of the simplest things is just to acknowledge the person, smile, ask them, you know, how their day is going. Sometimes you might not get great responses because these people are, you know, struggling, but they 9 times out of 10, I'll say just that smile or that acknowledgement really helps. So copyright-wise, I think the biggest compliment was that a month or two after the video, Google did an advertising campaign. It was with the Muppets, and they used the same song, Under Pressure, to do a commercial.
You're kidding.
No. So if flattery is the best, what's the quote about?
Mimicry or copying or...
Is a form of flattery or the highest form of flattery, something along those lines. So they actually did that. And so that was kind of neat to
imitation.
See. Right. And, with the song and using these puppets, there really wasn't much we could do. You know, even on the YouTube video, because we don't own the song, we're not, I guess, views now. You can, on your own material on YouTube, get a certain amount of cents or something for the amount of views you have. But it's not an option on that type of thing. So copyright was always there. Because it initially became such a positive, if anyone had put a copyright smash on it, it might have caused a negative reaction. So I think we were able to continue to get views and the attention because, A, it was doing some good, and I don't think anyone wanted to stop that.
Wow. You know, what I like the most is, you know, people always talk about, you know, in this industry you can get in a rut and you can get down because things aren't going as fast as you want them to go. But you did this with really no ego. You just did it. And then it kind of blew up into this wonderful thing that got you all the attention, even though that is not why you did it. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know how they say, step away from your ego and the things that you want will come to you, so to speak. You know, that kind of is what happened. I mean, you've got all these people know who you are because you made this video that you weren't doing it to show off your talents.
You were doing it because to a certain degree, I might have been, and I think in anything I do, well, no, if I'm being honest, I knew it was doing well inside of the little theater circuit that I was performing it at. So I thought, well, if it's doing this well here, I want it to do well on a larger scale. I want to share this with more people. I think, you know, if we can do work that a lot of people see, and you're passionate about what you do and you want to share it, sharing it with a large amount of people is possible. I don't know if that's ego per se, but it's definitely, I think, maybe that is egotistical, but I do want it to get out there and I do want people to see it. I think deciding to do something like this at that scale, like just asking my friend to film it, doing one take without putting a ton of money into it. In hindsight, I had initially thought I would do it that way and try to do a budget similar to How My Dad Killed Dracula, shoot on film. I don't know about film, but I would have done some form of digital with lights and a crew and everything else. But I, at a certain point, was hitting a wall with that because I was finding the attention or to put money in that way towards it. It just wasn't working and it wasn't falling into place. And at a certain point, I just said, well, what? Let me just go out and do it. I'll do it in a really simple way. I spent less than $100. I don't think I spent any money except on gas and just favors from friends. And then we went out and we just did it. We put it up. But well, you're bringing up a larger point about like performing and why we do it and share. But I'm so happy it became what it did. And I just look back on it with just the greatest. It just, for what it was, for it just became something, and I'm so happy that it touched people as it did.
Yeah, no, that has got to feel really good, too, that you are making people think.
Yeah, and I think that... I think your point, like the wall thing, that has been the biggest thing for me. Whenever, because I have had a small amount of success in co-star roles on television. I haven't really done any like films that I've done some independent films and things of that nature. So in my career, I've felt those walls or those obstacles and things aren't moving as fast as I'd like them to, as you said. And so my chief goal with every project that I work on is just, it kind of lets me creatively put out in a way that I'm not necessarily getting to do in my desired career. So those projects that I'm working on, every short that I've done, the feature I'm working on now, all of those things satisfy that creative side in me that in other ways, shapes, or forms aren't maybe happening as fast as I'd like them to. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, yes. Now, your latest project, The Elevator, is a feature.
Yes.
And this is touching pretty close to home as well. Not that you... Wow. Are you doing this to kind of deal with your past too? Or is it just because... I guess let's tell the listeners what your film is about.
So really simple, The Elevator is about a idiosyncratic teen, alcoholic addict who attends an equally unconventional treatment center and finds love, hope, and redemption while there. So it's a story of a boy going through a treatment center.
And based on you?
My true story, yes.
That is amazing, Sky, because I would never have thought that about you. So something went right. A lot
yes,
of things
that,
went right.
And that was the big thing that went right was going to the program that I went to. So as a 12 to 16-year-old boy, I really, through family dysfunction and just drug use and addiction, really lost my way. I was a high school dropout, in and out of juvenile hall, just completely struggling to kind of find my footing and quickly losing ground. I was getting in more and more trouble and just really in a bad place. And at 16, or 15 rather, December 17th, 1993, I went to Phoenix House of America, which is a teen and alcohol drug recovery center. And I was there for 18 months. And that was the turning point. Everything while I was there, I mean, I left the program. I graduated from the program. I went back to school, went on to college, got my high school diploma, went on to college, then went to grad school, and then moved to LA in 2003.
And then have pursued
all the things I've been doing. Yeah. You go ahead. You go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just so excited about it because, you know, it's this industry is hard enough as it is. But look at what you've gone through. And you are still following your dream, which I think is amazing. And I tip my hat to you, sir, because this is wonderful. I mean, think how many people have everything. You know, they've got money, they've got everything, and they still whine because they can't pursue their directing or acting or whatever. You started at the bottom. You went through it all at a very young age. And you pulled out and got it together, and here you are. It's amazing. And you're doing this feature as a way to get this message out now.
Yeah.
I think it's great what you're doing, Sky.
Oh, thank you so much. I was really recently inspired by the film The House I Live In. It's a documentary by Eugene Tarecki. It really shows just the state of our prison system and how the war on drugs has failed. And it brilliantly conveys sort of the overall problem and why we have to change our failed war on drugs and the policies connected with it. And I was so moved by that because of my own experience and everything I've gone through. And even just speaking, you know, in an open manner about the fact that I had, you're really kind and I really appreciate your kind words, but there's a stigma around drug abuse and people who have gone through those struggles. And I think the thing that the movie showed me is that, you know, there are still a lot of barriers around the stigma of people who've used drugs, and especially those who find their way in the penal system and are trying to get back on their feet. There are so many things that are against them as far as getting employment once they leave jail. It's like our system is kind of set up in a way that if you do fall into that system, getting your life back on track is nearly impossible this day and age, given, you know, everything that when you leave jail, how hard it can be to get back on your feet. So
I think that film was
incredibly motivating, and it really helped me just sort of solidify, okay, well, what can I do, or what can I add to this discussion to possibly help in some way? And the reason I want to make The Elevator, which is the feature I'm working on, is it just shows that alternatives do work, that there are these programs out there. Now, there are nowhere near as many treatment center beds in this country for nonviolent drug offenders as there are jail cells. So that really is the thing that needs to change. And if a film or my film can help in any way, shape, or form, that's sort of my passion or reason for doing it, as well as, I guess, the catharsis that I had just working on it. And, you know, I spent probably 4 to 5 years working on the script before I decided it was ready and done and started producing.
Wow. So you're in pre-production right now?
I'm in financing.
I'm looking
for people to help finance the film. But for me, that's exciting because I had spent so many years getting feedback on the script. It was really a long time process, because the feedback I kept getting was, your writing is good, but the script is more about Phoenix House than it is about your lead character. So I struggled in the writing process to get it to a place where it was more narrative and fit sort of the structure of, you know, a lead character and that character's journey, versus just sort of telling a docudrama about treatment. So that was where a lot of the work came in, and just really had to hone and craft and get it to that place. And even when I got it to that place, people were saying, you know, this doesn't really have a hook. You don't have a, you know, where's the football game at the end, and where's the, or something that would give it some sort of like commercial value. And at a certain point, I just had to say, no, it's ready. It might not have that hook, as you say, but it does have a purpose, and these types of films are out there and they can be made too.
Right. And now, has it been painful to write this?
Yeah, I think so. And even as I do rewrites and have, like, even just in doing a schedule and a budget, working with a line producer, and I had to strip down more characters from the script just to get it to a feasible place budget-wise, because cast really rises your cost. So recently I had to go back and do a little work on it. And it's you know, my grandmother passed away while I was in the program, and she's a big part of why I, you know, I think initially tried really hard to do it for her, because I wanted to make her proud.
Right.
And then so now when I reread the script, or I'm working on different portions of it, you know, that loss is there, and the character goes through it in the script. And there's a line that he has, it's just, you know, saying something along the lines of after she's passed, and, you know, just saying, I miss her. Or like, and when I read those things, then I can't help but be affected in the way, you know, just missing my own grandma, even this many years
right.
later.
Right. Wow. This is amazing. Now, are you going to be in this one?
As of right now, the plan is to direct, produce, and direct. But I'm not opposed to bringing on another director if that would help get financing and help get it made. In which case, there is a role that if I'm not directing, I will play. Because I think, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, I this is a passion project. I believe in it. But yeah, I think too, I should, as an actor, think in terms of my career as well, and,
right.
you know, an independent feature that I believe in and believe will do really well if I acted in a small part in it as well. I think that'd be fine too.
Wow. Well, I am super excited for you. It's got to be cathartic and exciting all at the same time to get your story out there. Are you worried that... Like, when you put it out there, are you going to let people know it is your story, or are you going to just kind of just put it out there?
No, I think that's part of it. And I think I have to, like, just doing this interview with you right now and just being very open about it, I think that's part of what, you know, does that stigma, would you want to be associated with that? And I think yes, because I am... sober almost 20 years. I need to say yes to that so that it is an example for other people. And if there is a stigma, if anyone has a problem with it or might judge, I mean, that's part of what I believe, like that film, The House I Live In, shows so well. It's just those, I don't think we need to look at it more as a health issue, and the reasons why people are using or misusing drugs and struggling with addiction, those issues need to be treated as a health issue and not viewed as some, like, they're not a part of society or they're outcasts because they chose to use drugs to cope with whatever problems they're dealing with. I think that's part of what has to change if we're ever going to really get past a lot of the issues we're facing.
I agree. I agree. We got to, well, there are so many things that need to change. I mean, like, you kind of got into it because of, you know, fatherless home, just issues that you were going through as a kid. And did you see that as your only escape? Is that, I don't mean to ask these questions.
No, not at all. You're totally fine. I felt at the time, I think it felt good and it was fun. And initially you don't do drugs or drink because it's, you know, it feels good. I think people initially do those things. Their gateways of smoking pot or drinking, because it's fun, and there is a level of that. And at 12, it wasn't like I was doing smoking crack or using heroin or anything like that. At 12, I was drinking and smoking pot and going to parties and having a good time. But because of my troubled environment, when I would face obstacles, that became my escape or my go-to in ways to cope. Which then, you know, the addiction and misuse came into play. And I, because of the nature of using, I hit a bottom, thankfully, I think, a lot faster than a lot of people, mainly due to crystal methamphetamine. That really just sent me down and down fast. So that... I had to go through that, and I did, and then in those depths, thankfully, went to Phoenix House and then did the program, and now here I am today.
Well, I'm really glad we have you here, because really bad things could have happened. I have enjoyed this talk so much, I don't want it to end, but we are running out of time. Oh, Sky, I could just chat here all night with you.
No, Denise, thank you so much. this has been a pleasure. Yeah, and honestly, this is the first environment in which I've talked about the elevator and everything else. My website is going to be updated, and we'll have all the information about the project. And I'll have, you know, just be continuing on this journey. And I thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
Oh, sure. Okay, so speaking of websites, tell us your website. Are you on Facebook? Are you on Twitter? Tell us where everyone can find you.
All of the above. Just do a Google search of Sky Soleil. You'll find my IMDb, my Facebook, my website, like I said, will be updated in the next couple of days, have all the information about the elevator. And, yeah, skysoleil.com is my website. And
it's S-O-L-E-I-L. Go to YouTube, look up Homeless Man Under Pressure. Also look up How My Dad Killed Dracula. And look up the elevator, because this, you've got a lot of great stuff coming up, and I'm really super excited for it. Please keep me informed, because I want to hear all about it.
I will.
And it was great talking with you. Thank you so much for sharing all of that.
Thank you, Denise.
All right, you have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, my goodness, that was amazing. I truly enjoyed the sea. You know, as you guys know, I'm big on going after your dreams. And this guy was faced with so many difficulties growing up, and he still is pursuing his dreams. And it's very, very exciting. So I hope this has inspired you guys and not depressed you, because he, you know, he pulled out and he's doing good things. So, wow, whew, I loved it. Anyway, speaking of Twitter and websites and stuff, we're shriekfest.com. We're on Twitter under Shriekfest. We're on Facebook under Denise Goss at Shriekfest, because I can't get my name off of there. Facebook won't let me. Anyway, come give us a like and follow what we have to say. I try to post inspirational things on there and hopefully keep you guys up. And we have a newsletter that you can sign up for. If you go to our website, there's a little section to sign up. And I try to put goal sections in there and just little goodies here, and we have one-minute interviews with different filmmakers and screenwriters and stuff in there, and hopefully learn a little bit here and there. So I had someone send in a question to ask what my website is. You can find out information about me, DeniseGossett.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook. And let's see, next week's guest, we have Jake Kennedy, another filmmaker. So tune in then. And it has been a pleasure as usual. I hope you all have a great week. tune back in here next Thursday and get those projects done. Go write. Go plan your film. Go get your songs ready. Do whatever's going to make you guys happy, because I know it does. I know I'm always the happiest when I'm pursuing my dream and doing my work and acting and working on Shriekfest. Someone also asked me, we have a little time here, so I'll talk about it. Someone asked me how it was to work with Mel Gibson, because we shot Get the Gringo together, and I have to say it was wonderful. He's very professional. He was doing things to help make my scenes longer and better, and it was a lot of fun. So if you haven't seen Get the Gringo yet, check it out. Let me know what you think. It's a very gritty action, and you guys have a great night. Good night.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.